Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
You are listening to Atlanta Business Radio. This is a special edition of Caring for Aging Parents. I am your host, Jenny Hewer, and happy Memorial Day weekend, everybody. I hope you're going to enjoy some special downtime and also recognizing those men and women who have fought for our country. Today's topic is something that is not talked about often, a substance abuse in older adults. It is often considered a silent and invisible epidemic because many people don't imagine that their grandparent or an older adult in their life may have an addiction issue. What we're looking at is about 92% of older adults have one chronic condition: diabetes, high blood pressure, arthritis, cancer. So there's a lot of polypharmacy going on, multi-medications. The average older adult between the ages of 65 and 69 takes about 14 prescription medications. And we are looking at the need for substance abuse treatment to increase, especially up to 4.4 million by 2020. So I especially have brought in some of my old cohorts that I used to work with at Ridgeview Institute in Smyrna, Georgia. I have Nina Murari. She is a case manager coordinator, and Donna Sykes, who is an addiction counselor. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
How are you guys doing today?
Really well.
So tell me a little bit about what you do as a case manager coordinator.
Well, I work at Ridgeview Institute, which is a psychiatric and addiction hospital in Smyrna. So specifically older adult inpatient unit. So we work with individuals that have a variety of different issues. It can be substance abuse, of course. So we do detox and have an addiction track, which Donna works with them also. And then we have individuals that come because they are depressed or bipolar disorder or having thoughts of self-harm. A variety of different other diagnoses that we work with on a crisis stabilization basis.
And Donna, what do you do as an addiction counselor on that unit?
I work primarily with the addiction tract, and I do run group,
you counsel, yeah. Do some therapy with those individuals struggling with substances.
Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. What types of substances are both of you seeing are issues right now with the older adult population?
Common substances we see is generally the prescription, the opiates, because older adults tend to have more pain, may have surgery issues, so then they get on pain meds, your Ambien, your sleep meds, benzodiazepines such as, Xanax. And then we are starting to see some more marijuana users. We're starting to see alcohol, of course, is a given. A lot of alcohol abuse. And every now and then, unfortunately, we are seeing some of the cocaine and maybe hit and miss a little bit here and there, the meth addicts too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know we did a video a couple of years ago on substance abuse in older adults, top hit on YouTube, but it's still unlisted. And we talked about even a couple of years ago how we weren't really seeing the cocaine and the meth use, but now that the baby boomers, it's been a couple of years now, and the baby boomers are coming in and bringing that illicit drug use from their past,
we're
still maybe participating in some of those drugs.
Exactly. Or as you start to have marijuana being legalized in more places, that people don't see it as a bad thing. And so, why can't I use it? And it helps calm me down. Or so we're having a little bit more of that creeping in. Or older adults tend to look at physicians as they have the answers to pretty much everything. So if your doctor prescribes it to you and says, here, take it, then it's okay, and I'm going to take it.
Right.
So unfortunately, you end up with a lot of addiction with the prescription, opiates especially.
Right, and that huge trust factor that
population. Yeah, because they're supposed to trust their doctor. You know, we're always raised that our doctors know what's good for us. So And they prescribe an opiate for 10 years, and so they take it for 10 years, not realizing that it's turning into an addiction.
Right. Uh-huh. And the issue we're having is that many older adults have multiple doctors.
Yes. Exactly.
Prescribing multiple medications.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's that, you know, hospitals are getting better where you can, everybody can see the records at one time. But doctors don't usually talk to one another, and patients are not going to be honest. So if you run out of your med because you're taking it, overtaking it, you go see another doctor, or they go to the ER and say they're having all these symptoms. So they go to the ER. The ER gives them the medication. Mm-hmm. So it's still, you know, very loosely looked after, but it's the patient that ends up becoming more and more creative, or buying it off the street, or off the internet, or they go to Mexico. Mm-hmm. It's that there's so many avenues of where people really want it, they can get mm-hmm. it, not understanding of how it's going to affect them, because it can lead to older adults becoming more confused. They can become more of a fall risk. They're mixing it with other medications, so therefore the medications are supposed to be on legitimately for health issues. Hypertension medications, et cetera, are not going to work effectively because you've got something that is stressing out your system. So your blood pressure might go up. So you go to the doctor, they give you more blood pressure medicine, or you have liver issues and you're not being honest. And they mm-hmm. think that, you know, it's a fatty liver for whatever reason, not realizing that because you haven't told them that you're drinking to excess. So it's actually having issues there. So it can lead to all kind of coordination issues, interact with other medications. And of course, if you're drinking and you're taking it too, of course, it's not going to work in the appropriate way it is. And older adults, as we age, and unfortunately we all age, so as we age, our metabolism slows also.
Right.
So you're going to find that medications are the doses that you can give to a younger person, you can't really give to an older person. Mm-hmm. Alcohol gets out of your system a lot slower as we age than it did when we were younger. So you're having these medications in your system longer. You're mixing them with other things. So it tends to create a bigger and bigger problem. And sometimes you have people that say they're old, you know, they don't really have much more in life. So why stop it? But you're not realizing how it's really negatively impacting them. It's not a quality of life that just because they're old, you want them to continue.
Right. There's so many different moving pieces to this topic mm-hmm. with substance abuse, because if you looking at an older adult from a holistic approach mm-hmm. and saying, is this person, do they have dementia or are they using a substance? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the doctor is not taking enough time to delve into what's really going on with this individual, just mm-hmm. an assumption that they just have some type of illness or... Mm-hmm.
Or just age and memory loss. You know, mm-hmm. there's alcohol-related dementia and, right. and benzodiazepine, it can cause dementia. So a lot of the memory loss is not just from aging memory loss.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and the I know, too, that we've discussed before is the fact that a family's perception, society's perception of an older adult and substance abuse does not really align with what's really going on.
Right.
Because they just assume that an addict would be somebody that's homeless or laying under a bridge or, you know, mm-hmm. just not that perception of not my 75-year-old grandmother who's right. sitting in the chair watching General Hospital 5 days a week.
Right.
Right. And you bring up the family component. By the time you get into your 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s even, and are still abusing substances, the family, you've pretty much kind of burnt out the family.
Mm-hmm.
So families are, you know, your first time you go to treatment, I always say there's the big hurrah. Everybody's there. Everybody's waiting on you. Everybody's so proud of you. As this continues and you start negatively impacting the people in your life that care, there's no big hurrah anymore. Mm-hmm. It's the anger, the frustration, they're distancing their children, you know. People leave you in your life not because they don't love you anymore, but because they have to start taking care of their own emotional health and welfare.
Right.
So we tend to have people who don't have good relationships because they're estranged from their children, or they're estranged from their grandchildren because they have just burnt bridges continually, you know, in what they've been doing. So it's unfortunate because you end up becoming more alone in your life. So then it's trying to figure out where do you go? Mm-hmm. Because once you start, like Donna said, once you start getting the alcohol-related dementias, once you start getting issues physically and you can't live on your own anymore for whatever mobility reasons it's affecting other parts of your body, it's where do you go when you have nobody in your life anymore to take care of you?
Right.
So,
and just that challenge, I can imagine as a case manager or even, an addictions counselor having to work together to think of where's this person going to go next?
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to do after they've gotten sober here? Where are they going to be placed?
Mm-hmm.
What types of issues are you seeing in terms of where do they go next?
Well, a lot of times we connect people to continued therapy,
mm-hmm.
Whether it is at Ridgeview in our outpatient programs or whether it is in another program elsewhere around Metro Atlanta, North Georgia, South Georgia. We get people from a variety of different places. So it's where is their willingness to connect them to outpatient programs or three-quarter way houses. There are some three-quarter way houses that are specific and have older adult components to them,
mm-hmm.
That they can manage. Or do they need to go to an assisted living, nursing home? So can they go home with care at home? So it's a variety, and everybody is a case-by-case basis.
Absolutely.
Because it's not just about the substances. It's about the nutritional component. They're not eating, maybe, because they are inebriated. They're on a liquid diet because of the alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So it's taking a holistic approach and seeing what we need to do to take care of this person. But it also is the person willing for us to help them?
Right.
Because not everybody who comes into treatment and is detoxed or is, taken care of, they're not always going to be receptive to needing more.
Right.
Once they leave. So it's on a case-by-case basis that we all talk to them individually, groups. They go to AA meetings. There's some specific AA meetings. We have older adult sponsors. We have an older adult meeting. So it's a variety of people talking to them, giving them the information, but ultimately it is up to that person as to whether or not they are receptive and want the help.
Right. Because once you detox and you start to clear up a little bit and then you realize what does my life look like if mm-hmm. I've been using
What's
these substances
mm-hmm.
for 20, however many years, or even late life alcoholism, how am I going to function? And it's like,
And you feel like they feel like they've just wasted their whole life and their life's pretty much over. And that's where our alumni comes in. We have a very large older adult alumni. Mm-hmm. They come in and they talk with the patients and they give them a whole lot of hope, that this is what your life can be. I did this at age 72 and I'm 83 now. So you can do this too. And that really gives them a lot of hope.
I know we've mentioned that, there's differences between younger adults and older adults in terms of recovery in many aspects, one, because of the body changes, but also research is showing that they do well with recovery, that mm-hmm. sometimes they do even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In talking to some of the older adults that are in recovery and some of the alumni program, what are you finding in terms of their length to stay sober?
Once older adults actually, I guess for lack of a better way to say it, get it. Once they get it, they actually have, it's a really good length of time of sobriety once they get it. Get into the support groups, support systems, getting everything they need in place. They actually have a great success rate once they get into recovery.
Mm-hmm. And I know some of the aspects that you guys integrate are the groups. What are some of the common core themes? I know older adults on a regular basis have core themes of like support mm-hmm. and isolation yeah. or boredom. And it's not everybody, because some older adults have great support networks.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
just specifically those facing the addiction issues, what are some of the common themes that you're hearing that they're presenting to you when they come to treatment?
Well, I always like to think of addiction as an umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And underneath the umbrella, it's not just good enough to clear up the actual addiction. Once you've done that, you actually have all the underlying issues. And underlying issues can be a variety. Depression. Depression because of when you retire, people feel like they've lost their purpose. They wake up the next morning and there's nothing to do. Grief and loss issues. Grief and loss issues can be grief because you've actually had somebody pass away, spouses, friends, you know, or grief because of things you are losing in your life, maybe independence, maybe your physical abilities to do things, your ability to drive. You've moved now and you live someplace else because you can't take care of yourself. So grief, it can be anxiety. It can be sadness because now you have realized you don't have people in your life because you've pushed them away. So it's extremely important, no matter what your age level is, that once you have actually detoxed, then you have to get to work on the underlying issues. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people, you know, therapy is going to be uncomfortable. If it is not uncomfortable, you're not doing it right. Because when you go to therapy, you now have to talk about the things you don't want to talk about. You have to deal with the things you don't want to deal with. You have to look inside yourself and start to work on those things that make you sad, that make you all kinds of emotions. And oftentimes, people who have substances don't like that because they're self-medicating. They don't want to feel. They don't want to deal with things. So it's how, you know, getting them the support system in place so when they are working through it, what do you have to support yourself as you're dealing with very uncomfortable issues?
Right. And there's many, you've probably heard this many times, I know I have, is that also you could be faced with somebody coming in for treatment for the first time that has never seen a therapist. Mm-hmm. They have never talked to anybody about issues that they have had in their life. Mm-hmm. Perhaps they were raised to not express feelings or share. Mm-hmm. So now you've got a person that's like 70 or 75 years old, has an addiction issue, but now they have 75 years of baggage they have not dealt with.
Well, you have kind of like two separate sort of older adult populations currently. Mm-hmm. You have those, you know, older adults that come from that old school behavior of you don't talk about it, you keep everything inside, you don't share your business with strangers. So you have that population. Then you have the baby boomer population that's coming up that are used to therapy, that are used to talking. It's communication, and they're willing to talk, and they come in with therapists and a whole army of people behind them.
Right.
So it's two separate sort of strange enough populations that are trying to deal with things. So you have one that has a whole different set of expectations than another set of older adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the... You know, I go back to sometimes I think about, you know, that families coming in and trying to support their loved one and just the misperceptions that they have. Mm-hmm. Are you encountering any families who are surprised by what's going on? Or
I think more so families, by the time they get to us, it's not so much surprise as to it's sadness, it's disbelief, it's frustration. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if they do have surprise, I think it's more so surprise as to what's underlying that maybe they never even knew. I mean, it's sad to think that they're older adults that have had really difficult, abusive childhoods that have never talked about it because they felt ashamed or they were discouraged to talk about it. And now you're in your 70s and it's coming to light and you need to talk about it. So I think those things are surprising to some people. It's surprising sometimes maybe to families as to substances on occasion because they don't want to tell them something or maybe the physical condition that they're in that they never even realized that their loved one was going through. You may look okay on the outside, but inside, you know, you have all kinds of issues and you could have a mild heart condition that becomes exacerbated and gets worse because now you're stressing out your body with the alcohol and the pills. Mm-hmm. So I think surprise is, you know, some of that they don't take care of themselves and what is looming because they don't. Because we've had individuals that, you know, drinking and drugging have, you know, not gone to the doctor. And then they found out they had cancer and the cancer's too far gone now because of the fact that they just never took care of themselves. And so the surprise that, wow, you know, here we are having to deal with this also.
Right.
So
because there wasn't any of that proactive nature because they're in the midst of a disease.
Right.
And in the midst of using.
And that's something else, you know, sometimes when they hear that it is a disease, you know, some of them have a lot of relief about that, but then some of them don't want to look at it as a disease. They don't believe that.
Right.
It's like a moral issue. I drink because I want to. I don't drink because I have to. So teaching them about that part of it and trying to knock down some of the denial from them as well as their families. A lot of times their families are in total denial that mom don't have a problem. What are you talking about?
Right. Yeah, it is that. It is that denial. So denial would be one of the issues that is discussed. You have the inpatient treatment, but then you also have the partial hospitalization program, also known as PHP, for an older adult tract.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the older adult in the day hospital, the PHP program, we have a few different tracks. So there's the recovering professionals track for individuals that are doctors, nurses, attorneys, business owners, etc. So they have a track that works with them. They also have the older adult track for addiction and for psych. And so they participate in small group with people that may be around their own age, a little bit younger than them. But then they have a specific, in the middle of the day, they have a group that they go to that is specifically with older adults that tends to deal with some of their issues that are a little bit more unique maybe than the person who is still working, that is still healthy, that is not dealing with pain issues. So there's a little bit of difference there in that they work with more of the issues that are specific to their needs.
Right. I know when I have spoken with some individuals who are older adults and they talk about going to different meetings in the community, they mention, man, some of these folks don't have some of the same issues I have, not in terms of the common feelings that come with addiction, but in terms of, you know, retirement or losses, a lot of losses.
Right. I mean, I don't think any specific groups are going to hit maybe all of that outside of Ridgeview. So we always recommend getting an individual therapy is really beneficial. There are AA meetings that tend to skew a little bit more to older adults, but it just varies and it depends, or NA meetings.
Right.
So you're not going to maybe get everything that you're looking for at every meeting. You're going to have support. You're going to have, and I think you can get information from no matter what somebody's age is.
Right.
You can learn from a 40-year-old just as well as you can from somebody who's 70 or 80. And somebody who's 70 or 80 may not really have that much wisdom as somebody who's 40 does. So I think you don't want to shut down all avenues of where you can learn from. But I think everybody needs an individual therapy because therapist. Because even in a group situation, there are things that because of shame or guilt or embarrassment, you cannot talk about.
Right.
And so, but you have to still deal with. So an individual therapist with just one-on-one, and you can get through some of those difficult things that you're dealing with, which may then lead you to be in other groups other than alcohol and, you know, drug groups. It may end up being Codependence Anonymous group or, you know, some type of survivors group or other things that can be there, cancer support groups. So as we peel back the layers of what is going on besides the obvious, which is the substance abuse, as you peel back the layers, it's to discover what else is underneath there that we can help, you know, a person with to make sure that they're getting everything that they need as far as support.
Right.
But it is, once again, like I stress, is it's up to that individual once everything is in place to go ahead and attend those meetings and do what they need to do.
So in terms of recovery, it looks very much like an onion.
Yes.
You know, you start peeling away the layers of the onion and you get into
the core.
But then the individuals that don't like the core, you see them again at Ridgeview.
Yeah.
So what are some of the common things they're saying as to why perhaps they went back out or relapsed, as you could say? Some might say, I didn't go to a meeting or...
Yeah. I mean, I think the common thing is that they're in denial, you know, oh, I feel so much better now. You know, fear is a great motivator. Fear can cause you to do a number of things to help you get well. Fear brings in people into treatment, or the family's fear brings you into treatment.
Right.
So fear is a great motivator. It's not a great sustainer of behavior, and you don't want to live your life in fear. So it's that, what else is there that you want to stay sober? So once people come in and they're fearful, once they start feeling better, oh, I'm feeling better. I can eat. I'm doing great. I'm socializing. I'm watching TV. I'm, you know, everything's good again. It's like, well, maybe I don't really need to go to a meeting. I think I can do this time on my own because I feel so great. So they let their guard down before they get out the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't really want to go to a meeting. You know, why waste my time every night? You know, I can do this. So my wife and I are planning to socialize more together. Or one gentleman I have, you know, I'm going to golf more. Right. You know, I just need to have activities and I just need to fill my life with things. And they downplay the severity of what addiction and cravings and, you know, relapse is all about because, so they let their guard down,
mm-hmm.
you know, they let their guard down. There's a reason you have support groups. There's a reason you go to therapy. And once people feel well, it's also that fear of, I don't really want to know what's underneath there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to hurt. I don't want to feel bad. Or they go to a couple of therapy meetings and it doesn't feel good. So it's like, why go there and mm-hmm. listen? Or why go to a meeting and hear people's sob stories? Well, those people are there for a reason.
Right.
And it's keeping them, you know, sober. And everybody does it differently. So yeah, it's the main thing of, you're not doing what was set up for you and you let your guard down.
Right.
And it's very easy to relapse.
Yeah.
I tell them a lot of times they forgot they were an alcoholic. Somebody
yeah.
that's been sober for 4 or 5 years and, yeah. oh, I don't need these meetings anymore. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, well, I've been sober for 5 years. I can have a drink, just mm-hmm. one. And the next thing yeah. you know, we're seeing them back in Ridgeview.
Right.
And I try to tell them, don't ever forget what detox feels like
mm-hmm.
because it is not a good feeling.
Yeah, they're good forgetters.
Yes.
Very good forgetters.
Yes, forgetters yeah. work.
But you guys do set them up with some wonderful resources.
Mm-hmm.
They come in, they get inpatient detox, set them up with partial, mm-hmm. set them up with all the resources that they need. If they need to get in touch with you, Nina and Donna, how can they call Ridgeview to get the information they need for treatment?
Well, Ridgeview has a main access center. Access center is our point of entry. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So they can call the main number at Ridgeview, which is the 770-434-4567. It is a live operator that is there 24 hours a day. They can ask for the access center or say they need to speak to somebody about an assessment.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody is out of state or too far away from Ridgeview within the state to get there, we have phone assessors too. So they could do assessments via phone and then they'll do a brief little update when they get there.
Okay.
So there's that way. Donna and I are actually on the unit, so they can dial the same phone number and ask for the older adult unit, which our unit is also called Cottage F, as in Frank, or also the Evergreen unit.
Okay.
So they can get in touch with us that way.
You guys have addressed a really important topic. Again, a lot of these topics we're talking about can go on because there's so much,
mm-hmm.
so
yes.
much to them. Donna, Nina, thank you so much for being guests today. And I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. And this is Caring for Aging Parents.